Now, please join me in welcoming the 44th President of the United States of America, Barack Obama, to South by Southwest 2016.
Hello, Spacers. I'm Christopher Schmidt, and I'm talking with Simon St. Laurent, co-chair of the Fluent Conference this week. The Fluent Conference is a front-end technology conference, and it recently wrapped up in San Francisco. On the heels of Fluent, South by Southwest Interactive in Austin, Texas, landed probably the biggest keynote speaker there ever could be for an industry conference, a sitting United States president. And he had some thoughts on tech and society. So this week, I thought it'd be great if Simon and I could talk about both South by Southwest and Fluent and what it means for our industry and what we feel is where the industry is going. Some notes on what I'm doing. Have you registered yet? The Responsive Web Design Summit is next week. It's a three-day virtual conference that covers the latest in web performance, responsive images, SVG, and a whole lot more. I'll be emceeing it. It's a great place to ask questions directly to speakers and fellow developers. And if you can't make it, or if you make it, you can watch the recordings afterwards as many times as you want, but you have to register to get the recordings. So you can register at rwdsummit.com. Also, it's CSS DevConf is a conference that tackles CSS and much more, SAS, post-SAS, JavaScript, React, and a lot more than that. We recently announced featured speakers, included Rachel Andrews, Chris Collier, Trent Walton, Jonathan Snook, Estelle Weil, and Sarah Drasner. And you, yeah, you can be a speaker. The call for sessions is out right now, but won't be out for a long time. It ends April 1st. No fooling. So if you want to speak with all these great other speakers, have a great time at a great conference. It's our fifth year doing this conference, and it's always a wonderful time. This year it's in San Antonio, Texas, near the Alamo. So for more information, including registration, also more information about how to submit, go to cssdevconf.com. Be sure to follow me on Twitter at Telject, T-E-L-E-J-E-C-T, where I try to be witty in spite of my many typos. As always, thank you for subscribing, liking, and telling others about Non-Breaking Space Show on iTunes. Or if you want to set it and forget it, have the show set straight to your email inbox by signing up at newsletter.nonbreakingspace.tv. As always, you can find show notes and links and more at nonbreakingspace.tv. Now, on with the show. But yeah, so how's it been? How's it? You have just flown in, sort of, not really, but you're recovering from the Fluent Conference in San Francisco. Is that where it was?
Yeah, it was in San Francisco. All kinds of energy, even though it was deep in a basement. Okay. Clearly, there are a lot of folks who want to know where the web is going, who want to find out about their favorite framework, who were, you know, just excited to see how all these pieces come together.
Okay, and just so people who don't know, like, what type of people are, like, what was the purpose of Fluent? Just, like, what type of people do you attract?
So Fluent is mostly attracts an audience of folks I think of as front-end developers or front-end engineers.
Okay.
So it tilts to the programming side of the web, but it definitely has like lots of design conversations, lots of, you know, core CSS stuff. Mm-hmm. Like what's new in CSS layout was a good conversation there. Okay. But so was React and Angular and all of that.
Okay, cool. So it's a front-end conference. Okay, cool. So yeah. What were the discussions? And you are the co-chair, is that right?
That's right. Okay. That's right. Right, with Peter Cooper, mm-hmm. who does Cooper Press, which has a lot of newsletters. So
right, the most famous one is the JavaScript Weekly. Is that right?
Yeah, so. He has JavaScript Weekly. He has Node Weekly, Ruby mm-hmm. Weekly. He has many of these, and he mostly does them himself, which is amazing amounts of effort.
Right, which is tons of email to do that too. So
yeah,
much respect for him to do that. So
I can barely keep it. It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
So,
like, what did you find topics of conversation at Fluent?
Well, one of the conversations that just kept popping up, maybe because we had a no frameworks table, was that people are, there are a lot of people who are using frameworks to build applications, but don't necessarily know how they work underneath. And the results of that can be really awkward. So there's kind of, there are a few different names for it. I mentioned the no frameworks table. Sometimes I hear about vanilla JS.
Right.
But roughly the idea is that when you're going to use JavaScript, basically write it yourself. The days when we really needed something like jQuery to wrap the differences among browsers away have largely faded as things have gotten more standard. The amount of stuff you can do with frameworks has grown, but so has the size of the frameworks and the amount you have to learn actually to use a framework. Or in the case of React, the framework itself is small, but there's a lot to know to figure out how to integrate it. So I think we're seeing kind of a stepping back from some of the, oh, my favorite framework, it just came out last week, it doesn't use semicolons, kind of conversation.
Yeah, I've been sensing that too, that people just wanting to roll their own thing. So rather than trying to rely on like jQuery or some sort of, like you said, framework before. So it's, yeah.
A friend of mine was suggesting that there's kind of a simplification coming to the web, that we've like hit a point of complexity where things need to kind of stop and stabilize. And
right.
I think he was thinking that we were all going to pick one framework and live in it. I think that's really wrong. But I do, you know, I have a regular sense from people that the pile has grown too large. Okay. And that, you know, we're actively trying to trim down to something that works.
Okay. Yeah, I think there's, maybe this is like a, I hate to use this phrase, but the inflection point.
Yeah.
The browsers have come so far that the need for those frameworks to, you know, duct tape us to a certain point to build apps and to do all this, aren't, they're still required to some degree, but not as much as before. So we're able to actually rep our own, you know, solutions almost faster and better. I mean, not better, but faster, or a little bit slower. But you know, just, you know, we don't really need that. And with the overhead of you know, the frameworks that you have to deal with, and we're dealing with performance issues, it becomes a serious matter all of a sudden that we have to think about, you know, our payloads in terms of what's it going to take to get down to a pipe. You know, if someone has, you know, has a large site, and so. And I hate to be that guy to say this, but we just got Google Fiber installed
at
our home office. I don't, and you, it's really weird. Like, I think in some ways it made me see that. Of course, Google on YouTube is blazingly fast. Like, as soon as the page starts loading, the video is playing. There's no buffering.
Right.
But if I go to other sites that, you know, aren't as, you know, developer heavy, you know, as a background, or as all these engineers, as Google would have or YouTube would have, and I go to other sites, you know, they have to download all these assets. Maybe they're third party assets that aren't on CDNs or whatnot. And you could tell, like, visibly, like, which sites aren't built for performance and which sites are, you know, even though their server might be slow, but, you know, it still takes a while for these things to load and get the render in the browser. And so it's been kind of eye-awakening experience, or like awakening experience, they see that there is a difference between bad coding and good coding on the web, even if you have a fast connection. So yeah, it just, and being able to pick, you know, or drop a framework for a vanilla JavaScript, I can see makes a good case for that.
So. Well, I'm happy to hear that you can see that difference at the high end of the bandwidth scale. My usual way of testing it is this ancient old cell phone.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've basically trained myself to look away when I hit a link and then come back to it in a minute.
Right.
But then I hit a plain HTML link the other day and everything was there instantly. And I was like, whoa, this phone is fast. yeah, I think there's a lot of issues around performance. I think there are also a lot of issues around maintenance. And there was a while, sort of early in the framework world, the So jQuery kind of got people used to the idea that there might be other people who would come along and fix their code without them having to maintain it all. And then, you know, Angular does all of these different things, and it's awesome because you kind of get these more things when there's an update. But over the last few years, I'm hearing more, okay, I'm not maintaining my own code anymore, but I'm still watching other people's code. Right. And as like the number of dependencies increases, it hits your load time, but it also hits just, okay, this is broken. I have no idea where.
Right.
So when you do have a maintenance headache, it's a much worse headache than it used to be.
Right. Yeah. So I can see that being a big issue going forward. So, yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah. At the same time, though, so I've been sort of knocking on Angular here. It was really clear at Fluent that Angular is far from dead.
Yeah.
There is, I think they had sort of a wobble when they went from Angular 1 to Angular 2. And instead of people going, wow, that's great new stuff, they kind of went, whoa, that's different. I don't know. I think
what happened from 1 to 2? I don't really use Angular day to day, so I don't know.
Changed a lot of directives. They re-architected a whole lot of the structure. When I sit back and look at them, the new version is a lot cleaner, but that took a lot of change to get there. I think what happened culturally is that a lot of people adopted Angular 1 thinking, it's Angular, it's Google, it'll be totally stable and here forever, like Google Reader or something. And then, you know, they were surprised when it changed more than they expected. I think in a way, Angular 2 is probably the more real Angular. Like, it might be a better time to adopt it if that's the kind of thing you want.
Okay.
But yeah, it's that jump. So Angular 2 is really kind of settled. We had Brad Green give a keynote. We had some smaller sessions, which were completely packed.
Oh, wow.
On Angular 2, and we had a meetup so people could like talk with the developers. It seems like the web development community is kind of fragmenting into clusters around different programming styles. And Angular is kind of for the people who want like to program through a framework primarily. You want primarily to think about Angular rather than thinking about the various web parts underneath and which piece of JavaScript is talking to which. React is more for the people who are happy to have one piece of the problem solved. And I think there are actually some cool architectural things about the way React deals with the DOM. But then the vanilla JS people are like, man, take me back to this age of hand tools. I want to make this stuff go. I don't want to be worrying about what Facebook decides is right for React or Google thinks is right for Angular. You could see these people sitting at the same lunch table pretty happily, unless they were maybe at one of the framework tables. But at the same time, like it seems like the approaches are really kind of splitting out.
So we got the Jets and the Sharks going out, and Ruby.
Kind of.
Yeah.
And we do have jQuery 3 on the rise, so we may see yet another gang. I don't know.
Well, I mean, I don't know much about jQuery 3, but it's just the details about it, but it's just my knee-jerk reaction would be like, would people just be jumping in jQuery 3 because they've been using jQuery for so long?
I think that's most of it, yeah.
Yeah. So, and they don't know.
It would be a giant jQuery revival.
Yeah.
I'd be kind of happy in some ways, but that would be weird.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Anything else at Fluent?
Yeah. So we tried to add a lot more design stuff, and we did add a lot more design stuff. And I wasn't sure kind of what the reaction was going to be.
Like, what type of design stuff are you talking about? Like,
one of my favorite titles was UX Insights from a Drunk Guy. Okay. You know, it was a pretty wide-ranging set of stuff. Some of it was as much like graphic stuff as it was design stuff specifically. Mm-hmm. Some of it was accessibility, style guides. Typography is always a favorite topic.
Yep.
But it was a pretty wide range at a conference that still tilts more towards programmers, and the programmers seemed to really enjoy it. I think there are a lot of people who think you should be able to do design and programming. And there are a few unicorns who can do that. Right. But a lot of it, honestly, is just being able to speak each other's languages. And I think that worked out pretty well.
Yeah, it's about languages, but it's also, I think, just mutual respect a lot of the time, too. It's I still hear horror stories of people just designers speaking to engineers, and engineers just saying, like, you know, you just add on a layer pretty, you know, on top of, you know, my app that I built that works and some of that, too. So it's,
yeah, I mean,
to some degree, it is speaking the languages, and I totally get that. I think that helps you build trust, and I think it gets you most of the way there, but it's still you both sides need to have an attitude of, like, we're building cool things and building great things, and hopefully everyone does have that, you know, that goes, you know, to a long way of helping out to build great stuff, you know, cool stuff. So,
I think mutual respect helps. I think there's also an increasing realization that it's not just pretty.
Yeah.
One of the points the UX folks have done really well is that design isn't just about decoration. Mm-hmm. And really the idea that the flow of an interface, the way that people use it, the way what they expect to get out of it,
right,
is a designed thing as well.
Right.
I think about some tools that I use all the time, and they were clearly built by people who have no sense of what an interface should be, except we'll stick some buttons here in a field, and you can ask anything you want, right? That'll be great. I think we're getting past that. I was happy at Fluent that the conversations were friendly.
Okay, good. Yeah, I mean, it's just like, I think if you haven't seen the growth within the last year or two, you know that design is being, you know, intricate. There's like companies just hiring is a better term. Hiring just swaths of designers, you know, that are out there that, because they know that they can't, they need to have design. They have that UX flow that it's part of their products that they're selling now. So they can't just put something out and expect people to want to you know, push buttons all day and try to learn how to make it work. So,
but yeah, one of the companies I've seen on this is IBM, which seems to be really trying to make design like central. And it's nice to see IBM talking about design in ways that aren't just their logo.
Yeah, they had we'll get into it in a second, but they had a really good presence at South by Southwest this year. So, cool.
Yeah, I guess the other thing that I'm wondering about is less on the design developer side, but more on the web native side.
Okay.
I think I sent you a quote from somebody. This is like an offhand piece in Internet of Things thing, talking about how, you know, standardization just has its own gravity and people are getting tired of these native apps and it's all shifting web. And I don't see that happening quite as fast as that suggested. But at the same time, like, it's really cool that you can write a web app and wrap it up in Cordova or whatever to sell it through an app store. Mm-hmm. But I'm just not hearing those conversations anymore. Like, I think the app store gold rush is over.
Yeah.
And that's changing the way we look at the web. I hope in a good way. I'm not really sure. But I'm even thinking the last time I was at South by Southwest, it was like there were panels on Is the Web Dead? Coming soon to iPhone. It's that kind of shit.
I think I've seen just more within the last this week. I guess I don't know sort of South by, but just this week of some software subscription services than I have before. And actually, I kind of like railed against this there's Mac apps that I've been using for at least a year, if not more, that I just totally love, and they've decided just to go subscription versus, which is crazy because it costs like $10 or $20 or whatever for this app, and now it's going to cost me $60 to $100 per year just to use it. So
whoa, that's not just change in model, that's a massive price increase.
Right. I mean, and they've bundled everything, you know, so instead of like buying everything at once and, you know, upgrading eventually, you know, they bundle everything to one software thing and I have to buy everything at once. And then even if I don't use all of it, you know, so it's, and that's just one software subscription service. And then there's like whole bunch. So like, I just see everyone going subscription and various, you know, and it's kind of make me freak out a little bit. And then I feel like, you know, we have Thanksgiving Day. We have, you know, buy everything you can see on sale on Friday, Black Friday. And then Saturday is, I think, the day we're just like, get rid of all your subscription services. Go right. through your, it just whittled down. Like, so you have Thursday, which is like, it was on Friday, Black Friday. You also have like, no, don't buy anything day, which is like,
But well, small business Saturday now. I'm thinking it's got to be the Sunday, like slim down Sunday, subscription ending Sunday.
Yeah, yeah. So then you have like, you know, get your computer ready, get your account ready, get rid of some accounts. Because then you have Cyber Monday, right? So that's like you buy everything you should have bought on Friday, on Monday. So
yes.
So Sunday, maybe like upgrade your browser if you haven't already, you know, your parents' browser before you leave the house. And then... get rid of subscriptions, because I think just it's going crazy with subscriptions and some of that. But yeah, I feel like web apps in general, they're just making a stronger case. I don't think the stronger case, but I think with, you know, responsive web design, multi-device apps, I think maybe we've broken the code. Maybe we've broken the code to do that now. So it's pretty good. So.
Well, I think so that ties into kind of one of the other keynotes at Fluent. We had one on progressive web apps from Alex Russell, who's been telling the story. It's an interesting blend of kind of classic mobile tools. It's actually really similar to the list of stuff in Estelle Weil's Mobile HTML5 book, except that at the time we were using this hideous app cache thing for local storage, and the options there have improved dramatically. So Alex is now comfortable saying, you know, we can build these apps as a service worker. It goes to your homepage icon, and it looks like an app. It is an app, but really it's a web thing, and nobody sees that. And I think that's got power. I don't think Apple's going to be really enthusiastic about doing that on the iPhone, but we'll see, you know, how that all plays out. I feel like a lot of these walls are coming down.
Yeah.
And mostly to the web's favor. So I think that's something I wasn't really forecasting a year ago. We'll see.
Yeah, it just seems like it's kind of weird. But I always like Kyle Simpson's Gitify quote, just always bet on JavaScript.
Yes. Never bet against the internet. You can't compete with Google. Always bet on JavaScript.
Right. So, but definitely. So I feel like that's a sense of, I think it's just so much easier. I think the only thing we have to compete against is this trained, experience that when you tell someone about your website or your app, your web app, that you have to tell them it's not an app that you can buy in the app store. You know?
Right.
So that's the only bad thing. I think we've treated... Apple and Android and Google have trained people so too well to just get an app from the App Store and stuff like that too. So
yeah, that's part of why I'm excited about what Alex does, because he is at Google and they do have this App Store and he managed to get this through. So I hope Apple has a similar person.
That'd be cool. Okay, so it's actually an app that you actually you register your progressive website app.
Yeah.
To Google. So okay, cool. I didn't know that's.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. I didn't know about that.
And it's stuff that works as a site as well. And progressive enhancement is part of the checklist. And they thought about these things. Responsive web design makes it possible.
Yeah.
So
that's pretty awesome. But hopefully Apple is up for that. But I don't know. But because the only way I can think you could cheat is just have a web UI like framework just as an Apple thing and just launch a web browser. And that'd be like kind of a silly.
Well, it's kind of what PhoneGap does anyway. Right. I don't think Apple wants to make that easier.
Right.
The other thing that was kind of fun was some conversation about Electron. You played with Electron at all?
No. What is it?
So it's probably best known. I think Slack uses it for one of its desktop things. The Atom Editor from GitHub uses Electron. And basically, it gives you a window and the stuff you expect in a desktop app. But all the stuff that you do for the logic of it is web stuff. There's another thing, NWJS, that I've been playing with for building desktop apps with web stuff. Node really opens a lot of these doors in strange ways. I don't know. I always hated working in Xcode, And I'm sort of hoping that all this stuff means I never have to look at Xcode again. I'm not sure I'll be that lucky, but it's good to dream.
Okay, cool. So Electron, build cross-platform desktop apps with web technologies. That is sounds pretty sweet. Pretty
awesome. It is. It's a little different from the progressive web app stuff, but you could pretty easily put your app logic into that. So.
Okay, awesome. That's pretty nice. Cool. Any other discussions?
Other than that, there were a fair number of people going from Fluent to South by Southwest, which is where
you were. So. Yeah, I was here, and it was, let's see.
It was huge.
Yeah, it was a little different for me. This is first time no one, a few people I knew came in, and by few, I meant, I could count friends or colleagues I've known forever. The people I knew, I can count on. I couldn't go past 5 people I knew that were coming into town for South by Southwest. So it was kind of weird to have that happen. So it seems like the old guard, wasn't around anymore. So
right.
Yeah, and that was kind of weird. So but some things, the big push a year ago was, I think, wearables. You have your Apple Watches, your Android watches. None of that was really around this year. It's like, but the big push, I felt like Samsung had more of a polished push for the products. I think they knew what they wanted to do this year, and that was, and my beef, if you listen to the show before, I mean, just my beef with Samsung, and I'm an Apple fanboy, which means I am kind of indebted into their, I'm like, can right. I get out of their ecosystem? I can't, it's like, I'm totally in. So I have that bias, but so my bias is that Samsung can't compete with Apple in terms of user experience, even though user experience is kind of like wobble right now, but they can't compete on hardware. So you saw the big push on the hardware for their new phone, and also, and probably to a bigger degree, the VR, the virtual reality experience. Right. And so there's a lot of that push this year for virtual reality. And also Samsung has a 360-degree camera. So coming out. So there's a lot of that, a lot of VR coming out. I even saw VR at McDonald's front this year, which is kind of crazy. McDonald's wasn't here. They had the M Loft, so
right.
There was no McDonald's per se directly, but they actually had, like, you could actually walk into their loft. I'm going to use air quotes in case people can't hear me. See those, but so it was. They had the virtual reality thing where it was very simple. It felt kind of rushed, put together, no offense. But it was a simple paint, a VR. It seemed like a simple VR paint tool. And you just paint the inside of a Happy Meal box, and then you could just print it off or whatever like that. But it was really cool because I just walked up and, it really kind of sold me a lot more on VR, because I've been kind of a curmudgeon about VR, just having done, VR markup languages in the past.
Yes, I remember VRML.
Yeah, and so I remember the book, it was about this thick, as thick as a Big Mac, pretty much. So I had a good time with that, even though it was like kind of super cheesy, but I felt like, with hardware being so much better than it was like 20 years ago and everything, I was like, oh, this is, it's pretty nice. So it was, VR was a big topic this year. And also, and I talked about, MLoft, right? But I felt like the company pitches, the offsite experiences were a lot more, I guess for a better word, pitch perfect, if you will. Okay. They're more in tune. There wasn't that much outcry that I saw from companies, being weird. Like, 'cause last year McDonald's, didn't want to pay the artists, the bands that showed up to play at their gigs.
Wow.
Yeah, so this year I didn't hear anything about that. Okay. And I enjoy the McDonald's experience. I'll actually have something to say about McDonald's in my blog a little bit later on, but so I'm a little biased about that. But I enjoyed the experience. I didn't go to do too much. I did a few things, maybe because I wasn't personally. I was sick earlier in the year, so I kind of bogged down with work. But what I did see was, it seemed like a more refined South by experience. So, and I felt like they kind of cut down on their content offerings this year, and I'm not sure exactly why, but there was
a lot. Yes, more buses to all the hotels got complicated, or
no? They actually streamlined the buses this year too. So instead of having like five different buses, they actually had two bus lanes circling and going around, and they also moved gaming to be in the Austin Convention Center instead of being at the Palmer. And
so
it was actually used Palmer, I think, as a venue space, which is, I think, how they could have Obama come in, which is like the big thing,
right?
That made national news, is that Obama came for South by Southwest. And so I feel like, you know, having a sitting president come in to deliver a keynote, you know, Q&A or you call keynote address, is just, I don't think that's a sign of a interactive conference slowing down at all. It's just like,
no.
So I think it's a really great feather in their cap, and I just really commend everyone who pulled it off. And so I think it was pretty awesome. You know, it was kind of chaotic a little bit for the traffic, but I think they did a great job with traffic in Austin for at least one day. So
I'll confess, in all my time as a conference organizer, it never occurred to me to ask the president for a keynote. So
it's just, they've been leading up. They've had a lot of great political figures in the past 5, 7, 10 years.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, they've, you know, they, and, you know, that, you know, I think, and then you have lame duck sitting president, I guess we will, who doesn't have to run for office, you know.
Right.
It's pretty good. I will say, like, I enjoyed having him here in South by, because it's always nice to have the president come to your city.
Yes. Unless you're sitting in traffic.
You're sitting in traffic. But what he had to say about electronic rights and digital rights, I felt like was really kind of not what the crowd, I think, would want to hear.
We do have to make sure, given the power of the internet and how much our lives are digitalized, that it is narrow and it is constrained and that there's oversight. And I'm confident this is something that we can solve, but we're going to need the tech community, software designers, people who care deeply about this stuff, to help us solve it. Because what will happen is, if everybody goes to their respective corners and the tech community says, you know what, we have strong, perfect encryption, or else it's Big Brother and an Orwellian world. What you'll find is that after, you know, something really bad happens, the politics of this will swing, and it will become sloppy and rushed, and it will go through Congress in ways that have not been thought through. And then you really will have a dangerous to our civil liberties, because we will have not done the people who understand this best and who care most about privacy and civil liberties have sort of disengaged.
It was one thing if there's a software's already created and Apple's just being like, no, which is also in their rights to say no, but it's also, but the government's asking them to create software to enter the back door and to open up a cell phone, which is, you know, right. Is that like, you know, say, you know, servitude or whatnot, what have you? Like, I don't know. I'm not a lawyer, so I can't really.
I enjoyed reading Apple's response to the Department of Justice. That was great. I just marvel. I'm not in the Apple ecosystem. Not an Apple fan particularly anymore. But they're lawyers. Those guys got my attention. That was good. Yeah.
How so?
Well, they actually went back to like what that Ritz Act was all about, and what CALEA and why that explicitly excluded people who were making equipment. You can ask phone companies to do things, but that doesn't mean you can ask people who make phones to do things. And it was really well done.
Yeah.
I read it in a heavy jet lag cloud, so it's possible that, you know, at the time it looked great.
Yeah. I just feel like it's opening kind of worms, and it's not like the sense that like other companies or other governments aren't hacking. I just feel like, you know,
right,
we've got to come up with a scenario where this is a people's, in my view, it's my opinion, just like, you know, we have, you know, human rights, you know, that the government is not in charge of, but there's also digital rights that, you know, the stuff that I create, if I choose to put on Facebook, it's because I choose to put on Facebook and get tracked and whatnot. Just because I create something in digital form, does that mean that, you know, and I put it in a secure place, doesn't mean, you know, the government has a right to come and ask for it unless they have a warrant or something, or
right. Warrants are nice. That's basically the point. Yeah.
So exactly. So it has to be e-warrant. And the thing is also, there has to be some educational process, because I feel like a lot of the stuff Congress is doing is by old people who don't answer their own emails, you know, their secretaries and the interns. So I feel a lot of this stuff is like, hopefully we can get a new wave of governments, you know, or politicians into the mix. Things would be great. So I don't know. Things would be better, I hope. I don't know. But I'll get myself.
There's always a lag. Stuff that worries me here is mostly that we're asking like Apple to do things that might be okay in the US, where we trust we have warrants and all of these other things.
Right.
But I don't really want that happening in other places where they don't have those protections, but we don't need to care about that. So depressing.
Yeah, that's what makes America so awesome. America. Go America. Maybe hopefully that will transcend. I mean, I was actually talking to someone who works for VPNs, and one of his things is to help China activists, you know, be more secure. So that was like, I was having that conversation at South by Southwest, which is totally normal that you run into someone doing cool stuff like that. But that's just, you know, I'm glad he's doing that type of work. So it's just, and it's kind of amazing what you run into that. But so I think what he had to say didn't really, would not, as a president, I was like, I would feel a bit better if he was not saying those things. In terms of the digital area, so.
But that he was there was still cool.
So. Yeah, it's so cool. Yeah, and then it's had a lot of issues. So, but I did like his plea to help get people involved in upgrading the country in terms of digital work and programming and software, because it needs more help in that area a lot. So, especially when you have, you know, the lowest bidder usually winning up contracts and stuff like that. So you're not going to get the greatest.
But even things that people pay a huge amount for. Yes.
Yeah. So let's see what else is going on here. So. Yeah.
It really is remarkable what low quality levels we tolerate in software. We do some things beautifully, but there is so much out there. And so much of the web is like private intranet stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, we think of all the stuff on top is the web, but it's really like all these buried layers.
Yeah.
So much of it is so bad. We got to work on that.
And then he also mentioned that there's a trying to bring Wi-Fi into low income housing in rural areas.
Problem is homes. There was a story in the New York Times about a month ago that had a couple of kids from McAllen, a brother and sister, standing outside their school building into the wee hours of the night, having to do their homework on their phones, using the Wi-Fi from the school after hours because they had no Wi-Fi at home.
This is
2016.
We've set up something called Opportunity Networks that is going to go into public housing, rural communities, low-income communities, to make sure that access is available precisely so those young people
can. You're going to try to solve this problem.
I'm trying to solve every problem, but what I'm... but here...
You got to have a goal, I understand.
But here's... Right. Here's the point that I want to make.
Yeah.
These are solvable problems, but it's not a matter of us passively waiting for somebody else to solve it. And that's part of the mindset that I'm trying to break.
Which is great. However, I could not find this organization. It's called Opportunity Network. And I could not find anywhere where they exist. Okay. So, I found Opportunity Network as a place for young kids, for academics, but I'm not sure if Wi-Fi is like on their agenda or whatnot. But I don't know if he was confusing with another area. But I like the idea, but I don't. But I couldn't, find out more about it. So that was
around here. It's mostly the state conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Like the state gave the town I live in money to put up towers to do rural Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
I mean, you just got Google Fiber. I just upgraded my cable modem because Time Warner was charging me too much money to rent it. That was
which is
and crazy, I took in the old modem, and they're like, "Are you sure you don't want our faster service for only $20 a month?" And I'm like, "The service you give me is crap and overpriced already.
Right?
You really think I want to pay you another $20 a month? I don't think so."
Yeah, it's the funny thing is like we cut the cord on cable as well at the same day.
Right.
It was just like the total Time Warner nightmare or whatever. It's just like the same day we had Google Fiber installed, we just cut the cable, everything at once.
That's brave.
Turned in all the equipment that same day, which is crazy. And then and then the next day we got in mail, we can upgrade your Wi-Fi by like 20% more, like 20 times more.
I've seen your speed meter on Google Fiber. I don't think anybody's going to give you anything better than
no it's not so but yeah so it's been it's you know I felt like internet not of like Google Fiber quality but that'd be awesome is that when you talked about the stimulus way back six, seven years ago
right
and we talked about infrastructure or shovel ready jobs I was like you know have a big interstate program that you had during the depression of just laying down fiber for everyone, just go across. I mean, just a great undertaking. Probably overspend on it, probably. But Google Fiber, I think if, you know, I'm pretty sure like maybe, hopefully within 100 years, 60, 80 years, people will still be able to use it. Maybe there'll be something better, faster going along. But at still at those speeds, you should be able to enjoy video. You should be able to enjoy a whole lot of things that you could, you know, instead of just rely on copper lines in for telephones or something like that. So yeah, it's what I felt like. You know, if I was in charge, Simon, that's what I'd be.
That's cool. Money on. And Time Warner Cable and Comcast and all of those guys would hate you.
They would hate me, and I would still invite them to the White House every once in a while. So
that's good.
I'm a consensus builder, and that people need to hang out at the White House more often.
Okay.
I mean, other than that, like I said, I didn't spend that much time at South by this year, but did see a lot of stuff about VR. I did see Pee-wee's new movie, Pee-wee's Big Holiday. That's on Netflix right now, so I recommend everyone checking that one out. It's really funny. That's about it for that. Wow. So
very cool though. Yeah, I need to see the new movie. I've always been a Pee Wee fan.
And so the writers are Paul Rubens and the co-star of Love, the co-lead of I forgot his name already, but he's funny. So they both wrote it, and then Judd Apatow helped fund it and produce it for Netflix. And so they're all at the premiere of that I saw. Mm. And, it was great. So
it lives up to your expectations from past Pee Wee adventures.
You know, I've never been a big Pee Wee fan.
Okay,
but I know people who are Pee Wee fans. Let me just say that politely.
There's something darkly subversive about it. I like it. It sort of irritates me on one level, but then I sort of like get amused at my own irritation. I don't even know how to describe it.
Right. Well, I will say I busted out belly laughs.
Good.
During this movie, and Paul Rust is the co-writer. He's one of my new favorite writers, so comedy writers. So I will always look forward to what he has to put out. But Paul Rust and Paul Rubens. So definitely check that out. But other than that, I don't know what else, any other changes? And was there a live talk about SVGs at the...
Yes. So thank you for, Sarah Drasner did really well at the CSS Summit, CSS DevConf with you guys, and then SVG Summit and... Mm-hmm. She keynoted Fluent. She gave a talk at Fluent. It was awesome.
Yeah.
SVG is really, I waited all of these years. I actually introduced it by talking about the book I published in 2002.
Yeah.
I'm so happy that it's, come to pass.
Mm-hmm.
It's still, I feel like the browsers and people working with it aren't quite sure how it fits in their expectations of, I'll just drop a JPEG here. Mm-hmm. But it's growing fast. that was really a highlight. And I think actually a lot of people were surprised in her talk by what it was capable of.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I think a lot of JavaScript folks sort of think of Canvas as the place you go to do real stuff because
programming.
Yeah. And SVG is like markup. Maybe it's code, but it's not programming. I don't know. It's that kind of divide. But, you know, the conversation after her keynote was really just like, okay, I got to go check that out.
Oh, awesome. 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 Yeah. Sarah does a great job. And it's nice to see SVG finally come to its own. So that's pretty nice. And I wrote an article just for my blog, just about fave icons. That was sort of just like, I just want to write down because I'm making a new site. I was like, I just need to write down. And in my research, you know, and I wrote this before, but I just found out that you could do SVGs for some browsers for fave icons, which totally blew my brains.
Make me really happy. There are so many of these little things that I would love to have be SVG. Yeah. I did have a bit of a challenge last night. I was trying to copy and paste an image of it, a Book Apart cover. And on their site, it's all SVG. But the browser doesn't know copy image for that. So it's all good. I found pictures. but, you know, that was one of those corners where I don't think we've caught up to what this means yet. It's also funny. So SVG is one of my South by Southwest memories. I can't remember who it was, but he gave a talk on like creating stained glass stuff with SVG. It wasn't real stained glass. It was like giant sheets of plastic he put up on store windows to like build installations. But I think he was brutally abusing Adobe Illustrator. and he was doing to get his separations, and he was generating it all with crazy code. If people take SVG seriously, I think we're going to see a whole round of stuff that nobody's even thought of yet.
Right. Yeah, there's SVG 2 coming, and so I need to learn about that and talk to someone about that and see what that's all about. But yeah, cool.
Yeah, it's all in motion. Yeah. The other sort of less artistic thing, O'Reilly has a salary survey going on for web developers. I'll put the link in show notes or something.
Yeah, send it off to me. Yeah.
But if you just do a search for like O'Reilly web developer salary survey, you'll find it.
Okay.
Just trying to get a sense of the current state of the market. And there's a lot of questions there too. Like actually one of them came straight from CSS DevConf.
Yeah.
There was an interesting divide in the audience in New Orleans between people who built sites and then walked away to build the next site, like your agency folks.
Yeah, we talked about that last time.
Yeah, and the maintainers. So that question's in the survey. I'm curious to see what we find.
Yeah, and Alista Part used to do a survey, but I'm not sure if they've done one in a while. So
their surveys have always been great, so hopefully they do. Stack Overflow just did one, and 45% of their respondents identified as a web developer in some form.
Right.
So I need to go through that more closely too.
Okay, cool. Definitely. Okay, cool. So our homework is to fill out the survey. And what are you working on next besides recovering from Fluent?
Oh, recovering is good. The big thing I'm pushing right now is training. So like one of the things at Fluent that really took off was we had these 2-day intensive trainings.
Yeah.
People did look a little like it was intense by the end of day 2, but that's okay. I think they, from the reviews, it looks like they all learned, and we'll check in with them later. So I think we're probably going to go into some more events that are sort of deeper dive and see where that goes.
Okay.
There's a lot to figure out there. But, you know, as awesome as Fluent is, it's like 2 days of half hour sessions and you get a lot really fast. And I think people need to, actually, I think there's a general thing. 'Cause like there's this whole sort of framework fatigue, workflow fatigue, JavaScript fatigue, like too many things are happening too fast. And so people are like, I built this like Tower of Babel thing and I need to like cool it down. And I think in events, there's something similar, like how much information can you really absorb in a 48-hour period and retain? You might absorb it for 5 minutes, but so that's kind of the direction I'm looking is, you know, what things do people really need that kind of depth on?
Cool. Awesome.
So,
cool. Well, look, check in with you next time and see where you are with that.
Great.
So, cool. So, how can people find you on the internet?
Twitter is probably the easiest. I'm Simon STL, SIMONSTL. The same address @O'Reilly.com gets to me too. So,
okay, awesome. And then I'll tweet the link to the survey, but if you also tweet link there, and we'll put in the show notes too for the survey as well. So
okay, cool.
For people, and I'm on the Twitter as well. You can find me at Telject, TELEJECT. So cool. Thanks, Simon, for being with us.
Always happy to see you.
Okay, cool. Awesome. Till next time.